This is Will's Band of the Week for October 8th, 2017. Hello and welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Nicholas from the Melbourne Bureau.
Yes, hello.
And Barrett from an undisclosed remote location.
Right, hello. I'm at the Cherokee Drive Bureau.
Yeah, the Cherokee Drive Bureau. He's about 2 miles away from Fourth Bedroom Studios, right? Or maybe a mile and a half.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somewhere in that range.
Yeah. It was. You didn't want to make the long trek all the way here today.
Well, you know, I looked at catching a flight, and that seemed kind of silly because I'd have to drive by your house to get to the airport, and you know,
The route's
the bus
just
schedule,
aren't convenient.
I couldn't find it online, so
yeah,
there might not even be a bus that goes right between our houses, so I just couldn't do it.
I reckon Cherokee Drive could be a good name for your new Southern rock cover band that you're about to start, Barrett.
Yeah. Cherokee Drive.
I'd like it.
Right.
Cherokee Drive.
Everybody's got to have beards, yeah. I think, too, though, right?
Everybody's got a beard, yeah.
It seems like it.
Even the female bass player.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cherokee Drive.
Well, it's good to have Nicholas back. When's the last time you were on? Has it been like 3 months or something?
It's May, apparently. Yeah, which seems like a long time ago.
All right.
But I'm always here. I'm always listening. So I always feel like I'm close to you guys, even though I'm just receiving your words. It's great to be back on the airwaves.
Yeah, good. Well, we have just all kinds of stuff. It seems like whenever we have Nicholas on, we're just packed full of great material. Even if we have nothing to talk about, Nicholas makes it into something worth talking about, right? So this might
First of all, we've got to figure out what time is it there? Tomorrow, right?
It is, Sunday morning, just after 7 a.m.
And it's Saturday after 3 p.m. here. Yeah. So we could have, if we got Craig on the line, it would be quarter after 9 p.m. London time.
On Saturday night in London.
Right. Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Pretty cool, right?
We're all just in the middle of the weekend. Big rock and roll weekend.
Yeah. So I have a tiny little trivia thing that's kind of funny. I was looking at this site called Nomad List. You guys ever seen it?
No.
No.
It is a it's a site for, I guess it seems like it is geared toward people who work on computers, and so the location that they're working, it can be anywhere, right? There's like remote, just people working on laptops, right?
Okay.
And so it has all this information about where they could go live, because you can live anywhere in the world, right? As long as you have an internet connection, right? So you put in all these criteria, and then it finds cities in the world, like anywhere in the world that meet your criteria. So just for fun, I put in a bunch of criteria, like, you know, safe, and I wanted good things. I wanted it to be safe, for example. And fun. You'd want to go someplace fun, right?
Safe and fun.
Yeah.
Those are
safe and fun.
Be up in my top 10 as well.
And I think I had.
Sure.
I think I had walkable and. I don't know what else it was, but anyway. Okay, think of like all the cities in the world, right? I put in a bunch of random criteria, and the first city that I was supposed to go to was Berlin. Okay, I thought that was interesting, but guess what? Number two. This is the most fun result that I got. Number two, cities in the entire world. Nope. Kitchener.
Madison.
Kitchener. It really
Kitchener.
Did. It said Kitchener, Ontario. Yeah. So it wants me to go hang out with Anurag.
Was that one of the questions?
Like, maybe
do you want to hang out with Anurag?
Maybe on the, on those filters, I forgot. I inadvertently put
like Anurag,
Anurag
yes or no.
Present.
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Anyway, yeah. Then, you know, then I did it a second time and it came up with a completely different list because it was just like what I happened to enter into the data at that moment.
Right.
I think Melbourne was on the list, like in the top 50 when I scrolled down. You know, all the cities that I already think mm-hmm. are cool were on there. Not Ipswich,
though.
Well,
we made the top 50.
Yeah, why no Ipswich, though? Come on.
Is Melbourne safe and fun?
Yeah, it's pretty safe and it's pretty fun.
All right.
So there you go.
There you go.
Better than average on both criteria, right?
Look, I think Melburnians have got a reputation for loving living in Melbourne. Yeah, I think the people who live here, we all really like it. Uh-huh. So there you go. So yeah, come and have a good time. Come and be safe and walk around. I don't know what else to say.
Do you think you're superior to all other people who live in different places?
Other people might say that. We've got this rivalry with Sydney, that's the other sort of biggest city and big city in Australia, uh-huh. where we don't like them and they don't like us for some reason. You know. But, you know,
it's a bitter rivalry.
I have no problem with Sydney. Yeah, it's just a rivalry, you know.
Yeah.
But people that live there like Sydney and don't like Melbourne, and people that live in Melbourne, we like Melbourne and don't like Sydney. Yeah, it's one of those silly things.
Well, it's better than the other way around. Like if everybody wanted to live somewhere else because they hated where they were, that'd be bad, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think we're all pretty happy. Pretty happy. Yeah.
All right. We talked. We had extensive discussions in pre-production, and
we did.
Yeah, that's why we're.
I've been talking for an hour already.
Right, and so I'm going to follow the protocol that was established by the committee, and we're gonna start out with this.
And now it's time for the death of the week.
Out of nowhere, completely out of the blue, at the relatively young age of 66, Tom Petty died this week. That was kind of a shocker, wasn't mm-hmm. it?
Yeah, it was a surprise. I mean, I guess that's a surprise when anybody dies, but that's pretty young.
Yep.
I'd say, you know. But yeah, initially there was reports that he had died, and then further reports that, you know, the LAPD was retracting that, and all the news organizations were admitting that they'd kind of gotten ahead of things a little bit. But gradually it became clear that if he wasn't literally dead, he was just, you know, hanging on and about to die, which he did on that same day.
Yeah, there was one report that I read that they hadn't notified his relatives, and
and
there may have been some kind of corruption thing where somebody paid to get a scoop or something. You know, one of those sites. Yeah, it was pretty bad.
Oh, really? I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, so maybe. But maybe that's not true. So, you know, I'm just throwing that out there. Because I read it somewhere on the internet, so it might be true.
Yeah, I mean, no question, right?
Yeah.
A group of 100 people that read everything on the internet and fact check it and make sure that it's true and that people can see it.
Right. Yeah.
So you can trust it.
So Tom Petty, I kind of became a Tom Petty fan in, you know, kind of when I was just right my first year of college. And that's when the Damn the Torpedoes album came out. And I thought it was pretty cool. And then there was probably that period of just a few years where maybe I was kind of interested in Tom Petty. And then I didn't really pay too much attention to him that much. And then about 10 years ago, when I started playing in a band with aging rockers, and we would occasionally play a Tom Petty cover. And every time we played a Tom Petty song, they were always fun. And we probably played like 4 or 5 of them. And and it kind of gave me a new appreciation that a lot of his old songs, I think they wore pretty well in my mind. Now, if I had been listening to the Rockin' Apple, I probably would be so sick of them because they probably play the same Tom Petty songs like every single day for the last 40 years, right? So then there'd be like a backlash in my mind. But since I haven't been oversaturated, I think it's his music has stood the test of time, I'm going to say.
Yeah, I don't know. I was never really a very big fan. I mean, I didn't actively dislike it. I did buy one Tom Petty record. I was remembering this with my stepbrother when, for his 14th birthday, which was 1981, I bought him the single in a picture sleeve of Refugee.
Yeah.
And that was it. That's really my only connection with Tom Petty. You know?
What about the Traveling Wilburys?
You know, I mean, I appreciate the collection of talent and stuff like that, but it would never occur to me to, you know, go out and buy that or purposefully listen to it. You know, it's just, it's not really my style.
Barrett's kind of lukewarm on this whole Tom Petty thing.
Yeah, I don't know.
All right, I mean, the
most interesting thing to me about Tom Petty is how all of his stuff from 89 to 91 all sounds like Jeff Lynne. You just hear his production on all those songs, like Won't Back Down and stuff like that. They all, just listen to any of those. Won't Back Down, I wish I could think of more off the top of my head.
Was that after he met him through the Traveling Wilburys, and then he's like, okay.
Yeah, I think it was all during that time, like,
yeah,
just before and just after 1990.
Yeah, well, I think
if we play a song that would be one that I would choose, just to notice the ELO Jeff Lynne sound.
I made a list that's almost all like 1976 to 82, I guess.
Yeah. Those are, I think, are the ones that held up better.
Yeah.
You know, like Refugee and, it's like escaping me now.
All right.
One thing I would be interested to know, though, is like Tom Petty is such an American sounding artist, right? Like, was he big in, he must have been big in Australia, but what did you think about it, Nicholas?
Well, yeah, we certainly had his music on the radio, and yeah, I'm kind of familiar with his, you know, famous songs and with him as an artist. But I always got the feeling that he was one of these artists who was really, embraced by America and not so much other countries. I don't know. I think how you're talking about him sounding so American, I always kind of got that feeling, a little bit like, I don't know, the Eagles or something like that. It really felt quite bit kind of hard to completely relate to his music, I suppose, because it had so much of that kind of flavor to it.
Would you say the same thing about like Bruce Springsteen, or does that have more resonance?
Yeah, I suppose. I mean, it's hard. I find it hard to kind of like separate what's just my own taste as to whether I like someone or not and what's, you know, some sort of national feeling on any of these artists. I mean, certainly there's lots of people who love Bruce Springsteen in Australia massively and have for decades. Little bit different to Bruce Springsteen. I reckon people like Bruce Springsteen, they you know, as an artist, they have such a, they're kind of lauded, one of these sort of lauded artists, so people kind of tend to latch on and delve deep into these kind of lauded artists and love them kind of more. Whereas Tom Petty, I wouldn't say that he's been a sort of a lauded artist from an Australian music lover's perspective. That kind of making sense?
That does make sense.
Sure. Yeah.
But he's kind of one of these artists that's just been around for a long time, a bit like, I don't know, Elvis Costello, I suppose, you know, still kind of actually making music and touring, and got the feeling that a lot of people really loved his, you know, one or two of the last couple of albums that he put out with, I think, did he sort of like reform with the Heartbreakers after many years, and they put out an album in the last few years that people really liked, and he was back touring and that sort of thing. I got the right end of the stick.
They had just finished their 40th anniversary tour, and I don't think he had any like hit songs or really popular songs in the last at least 10 years, maybe 20, right, Barrett?
Yeah,
I would say 25 years.
Right, right. Well, I'm gonna play a song if you guys don't mind. Some of this, I think, it just depends like where you were and what situation you were in when you heard it, but this reminds me when I was back in college, which was a long time ago, and I always really liked this song. It's probably my favorite. It's called Here Comes My Girl. I don't know why.
just seems so hopeless. I ain't really sure, but it seems I remember the good times with just a little bit more in focus. But when she puts her arms around me, I can somehow rise above it. Yeah, man, when I got that little girl standing right by my side, you know, I can tell the whole wide world that she had it. Hey, here comes my girl. Here comes my girl.
That's Tom Petty.
Yeah.
I like his alternating between the talking and the singing, I think, is effective in that song.
Yeah, that's a nice little touch. I don't know. I guess I just don't have very much to say about Tom Petty, I guess. You know?
His music's fine, and maybe for me, like an example of a musician who's like, there's nothing very wrong with his music. There's nothing really wrong with it. So a little bit like you, Barrett, leaves me with not much to sort of say.
I'm the only one standing up for Tom Petty here.
But that seems a bit disrespectful. How many times have I, few days after he's dead?
I must have heard that song. Like, how many times am I, like, I don't know, 25 times?
You there, Barrett, still? Don't struggle in the quicksand.
Wait, I went upstairs for a moment, and I think I'm going to have to stay down here.
Yeah, I think so. You were saying something about having heard that song 25 times. That's about all we heard.
Yeah, and I never felt compelled to have an opinion about it at all. It certainly wasn't annoying. It wasn't like exciting to hear it in a bar or whatever. It just was. Yeah, there it is.
You were not.
That's how I feel about.
Unmoved. Unmoved by Tom Petty.
You weren't in a dorm at Northwestern University in the formative years of your life.
That's true.
That was the problem.
But in the intervening years, have you ever met somebody that I know two that have a really high, that just love Tom Petty?
Uh-huh.
And that would talk about it, you know? I know two.
Yeah, I don't,
and
I mean,
it's not something that you could talk to. How many, I don't know, let's say you talk to five of the people that you speak with most frequently and ask them to name their top 20 artists of all time. Would one of them mention Tom Petty? Probably not.
Hmm. Yeah.
God, I mean, Barrett, I'm interested in these two friends of yours who were actually really into Tom Petty. And
well, one of them is a friend of Wilson's. He's a junior in high school.
Okay.
And he's way into him because, you know, I don't know. This kid loves ELO, and that was his, you know, his introduction.
His gateway into
from Jeff Lynne's production of the fire hose of hits he had around 1990. And so that's one. And the other one is my friend Kim from high school. And I never questioned her about it. I don't know why. It didn't bother me that she liked him so much, but I just thought it was a bit curious.
Okay, so, well, as a punishment...
I think we need to cut all this out because it just sounds like such a dick. It just sounds like a dick.
I'm going to punish you guys.
Like, I'm glad that he died. I'm not.
For disrespecting Tom Petty, I'm going to make you listen to one more song. And tell me this isn't good. Okay, there you go. That's a good song. You guys can deny it, but I'm going to say it's good. I need to know.
I didn't say it's not good. I'm totally agnostic about Tom Petty.
Another cool thing about Tom Petty is that his keyboard player's name is Benmont Tench. So that's cool,
right? That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
And I think if your name is Benmont Tench, that's just completely cool. All right, Tom Petty, a stirring tribute. People are probably teary-eyed after the statements you guys made. They were so tender. All right.
No, I'm not, you know. Nicholas seems to understand where I'm coming from.
I do. A little too much.
Yeah.
I still love your comment that you're agnostic towards Tom Petty. Does that mean that you don't know if you... You're not just saying if he exists or if he doesn't exist.
He does exist. Yes. Well, there's an interesting question right there. Does he exist?
That's right. You're taking no position.
Wow. We're getting very metaphysical at this point.
Yeah, that's good.
Because he, in one sense, he certainly does not anymore.
Yeah.
But the idea of Tom Petty is, I think you'd have to call that a truth, right?
Well, he did exist.
Certainly.
His music still exists.
Yeah.
Barrett, you're...
I sound callous, and I did not mean to come across that way.
All right.
I felt like I had to have a take. I had to have a hot take.
That's right. We're all about hot takes here. Yeah. All right. On to the next segment.
The next segment. Is this a good point for me to make a suggestion as to a new segment for the podcast?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you guys always seem to, you're often throwing around ideas of things to do, and sometimes they happen, sometimes they don't.
Right.
So this is my proposition that that any time you have a dream where a famous musician appears in that dream, that is that's the segment. So luckily for you guys and our widespread listening audience, I did in fact have one of these dreams last night in which Oasis's Noel Gallagher appeared and he was looking really good. So the scene was that I was walking across the car park of the Safeway supermarket. Safeway is a... Have you got Safeway supermarkets in America?
We have some, yeah, in some areas.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was walking across. It was sort of nighttime, and Noel Gallagher was dressed in a really bright red Nike tracksuit, sort of bottoms and tops. And, you know, he looked like Noel Gallagher. He had the Noel Gallagher haircut, and he was sort of walking behind his wife. I don't know what his wife looked like. He was... she was a very sort of like normal, average-looking woman, sort of middle-aged woman, and he was talking to her, but she was like a couple of meters ahead. So he was having some sort of loud conversation with his wife as he was walking across this supermarket car park, and I sort of walked in the opposite direction past them. And in the dream, I was sort of thinking, oh, yeah, that's really cool. That's the guy that used to be in Oasis, and he must have done like massive concerts where he like walked out onto stage in front of 100,000 people and they all went, yeah. But there he is. He's just walking across the Safeway car park.
Wow.
And that was it?
I like that. That's cool.
And that was it, yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes dreams, they're an abbreviated little segment, right?
Yeah.
What does it mean?
Well, that's for our listening public to you know, they can email us on willsband@yahoo.com.
Right.
But I always think it's funny when you know, a music. I mean, I'm not a huge Oasis fan, but I always just think it's kind of curious as to which musicians sort of pop up in my dreams. Do you ever have that? Do you ever have dreams and, like, you know, John Lennon's in your dream or something like that? I always find it really kind of exciting and fun.
Sure.
I can't remember having a dream like that.
I can't either, but I kind of think I probably have. You know what I mean? It's just that I can't come up with one right now.
I had a dream once about a band. None of them appeared, but I dreamt, this was when I was, I don't know, maybe I was still in high school. I dreamt that I heard a new Psychedelic Furs song, and when I woke up, I didn't remember how it went, but I remembered that I had heard a song I never heard before. So somewhere in my mind, I composed that song and ran it through my head. And you know what I mean?
So you wrote a new song for the Psychedelic Furs.
But I didn't have any access to it.
Yeah, and then you couldn't convey it to them.
I couldn't, no. Yeah.
That is cool.
So, you know, maybe after, I don't know, maybe if I get my brain frozen, I got a great die, and they can go in there and look at all the little crevices. Like, what's this? This is very interesting. And I put it up. They have a way to, like, broadcast it. And
be like a Psychedelic Furs unreleased track.
Unrecorded and unreleased. Yeah.
Wow, yeah. So. That's the vault, if there ever was one, right?
Actually, I don't think I want them digging around in all my little crevices of my brain. I don't. There's a lot of stuff in there that probably should just die with me when I die.
You know, speaking of that, I was in a conversation a couple of weeks ago, and it made me think of a lyric by The National, and I was going to say it, because I was like, oh, that reminds me of this lyric, and then I stopped myself because I thought, these people are going to think I'm crazy if I mention this, so I'm just like, I just dropped it, but the lyric is, I had a secret meeting in the basement of my brain. Remember that song? It's called Secret Meeting by The National. Yeah, it's great. It's a great line, right?
Yeah, that is good. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Secret meeting in the basement of my brain.
Yeah.
Or mind? Brain. Mind. Whichever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm. Now, everybody can take into consideration Nicholas's suggestion for a new segment. But now it's time for the real segment. I want people to be impressed, okay? It's my whole goal. Doesn't matter if the bands were any good. Doesn't matter. The details really don't matter. But I'm proud as an aging rocker to say that I saw 3 shows in the last week.
Wow.
Are you guys impressed?
Very impressed.
It was almost 3 nights in a row. So,
oh, my God. You didn't take any time off work?
Well, I did, yeah, because I was out of town. But my wife accompanied me to all 3, which is super cool. So she's a cool aging rocker also. So first we went to see Alex G. in Madison. This is the 3rd time that I've seen Alex G., and, you know, he's kind of a podcast favorite. And it's really cool because he's getting better. He's been better each time that I've seen him. Like, he's more confident. His band is more confident. They're tighter. Mm-hmm. And so the first time I saw him, he was playing at the Memorial Union. Barrett knows all these venues. We expect our listeners to memorize all the Madison music venues that we talk about, right? And know all about them. But
right.
The first show, he was at the Memorial Union inside. He was playing a $150, what do you call those things? An Epiphone Les Paul Jr. with the tag still on it from Guitar Center. So is that like the classic? God. Is that like the
actually,
classic?
I think those are $99.
Yeah, they might be. Yeah, the Les Paul Jr. They're like a small, short scale. Yeah. And then the second time was at the Frequency, and then this time was at the High Noon, and it was really good. I recommend Alex G. The following night.
Doesn't he bill himself now as parentheses Sandy?
Yeah, he's got Sandy.
Alex G. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's just. I can't remember what it means, but it is because there's some woman on YouTube called Alex G. So it's like to make sure that you have the right Alex G, I think. His name is Alex Giannascola, I'm pretty sure is his name. I posted a thing on Twitter that Alex G is better than car seat headrest. Because I just thought that was fun. Mm-hmm. And Alex G's brother liked my tweet. So this
whoa.
Totally, we are completely, hitting the big time now. So wow. The next.
Just imagine the effort that his brother went through to do that.
I know.
He
pressed a button.
He didn't have to do it.
He looked at a screen and put his finger on something. Yeah, that was nice of him. Yeah. The next night we went down to Chicago and saw indie rock veterans Saint Etienne at the Park West. And Barrett, you had told me that the Park West is a cool venue. And it's really cool. Really cool.
Yeah.
So here was my, I had a fear going into this that because this band is basically two guys who I think write most of the music and compose it on synthesizers, and a woman singer, Sarah Cracknell. And I was really fearing that it was going to be two guys standing behind keyboards and or laptops and somebody singing along with it, and that it wouldn't be very good. Well, as it turns out, it was almost the opposite. It was the three core people plus a complete five-person band. So there were eight people on stage. So they had those three people. They had a bass player, a drummer, a second or a third keyboardist, a guitar player, and a backup singer. So it was really a complete, legit live show. And it was even, it was interesting because the bass player, he's playing this, you know what their sound is like. It's kind of disco-y, retro 60s kind of thing. And he's playing a, he's playing a an Ampeg 8x10, like big rock and roll bass amp that sounded like classic rock. It was almost kind of funny because he was playing this stuff on the bass. Took a little adjusting for how different that was from like some of their synthy sound that they have on their recordings. But overall, it was great.
Right.
It was very good. I was very happy. And then the following night, this was funny because Barrett, you and I were talking to Craig a week ago, and he was like, "Hey, Japanese Breakfast is going to be in Denver." So we from Chicago, we went to Denver for two nights, and Japanese Breakfast was playing the night that we got there. And but we were running a 15K the next morning, and I was like, "Oh, I'm going to be completely dead if I do this, you know, three nights in a row." So we didn't go. But part of the reason we didn't go is because Japanese Breakfast was coming here just a couple nights later. So then we were back here in Madison, and on I think was that Tuesday night, I think we went to see Japanese Breakfast, and great, another good report. Her live band is really good. And again, I was a little concerned because I had seen videos from a year or two ago where they looked really raw, and I know that it's kind of a solo project. And you know, when you have a solo project, then you have to put together a live band, and who knows how good they're going to be. But her live band is really good. The sound is really good. Whole thing was really good. So I'm all thumbs up on it. Japanese Breakfast.
Right.
There you go.
Nice.
I know that wasn't a Nicholas level report, but hey, you know, three in a week, right?
That's good. That's great. I'd like to see Japanese Breakfast. I liked one of their albums.
Yeah, it's a band worth seeing. So I recommend them. Well, Nicholas, do you have any live reports?
I don't. I feel, you know, that in my position as the Melbourne correspondent, there's, you know, I should be giving extensive live reports all the time.
Right.
It's just not happening at the moment, guys.
No, that's okay. It's tough. You have young children at the house, so.
It's true. I always feel like it's kind of, you know, those of us, you know, who are parents, you know, it's really easy to use your children as an excuse for anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really want to use it as an excuse, but it's true. I'm not getting out of the house to see live bands all the time.
Going out rocking and rolling, I think I'm going to allow that as an excuse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I went out and
saw, you know, lots of music's being listened to, so have a lucky down there.
I saw Ryan Adams at Bree Stevens last Friday.
Oh yeah, so let's hear the live report.
Do you want a Nicholas Craig type of description, or more like I feel more like giving just the short Will type description?
I
liked it. It was cool. It was good.
All right, there you go.
It was good.
Fun. Were you like really far away on the soccer field, or you?
No, I decided just to not get tickets until the last minute. We had a group of six people going.
Mm-hmm.
My sister and brother-in-law and their son, and I just waited and bought the gold circle tickets for $50 a piece.
Well, that's reasonable.
Instead of, you know, that's what the lawn ones cost.
Yeah, so, did you
waited and got people that were desperate to unload them.
So you found them outside. So you were a wheeler and dealer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I did it ahead of time. I was driving all over the place. Every one of them was one at a time.
Wow.
One ticket here, one ticket there. Yeah.
That's pretty impressive.
It was kind of fun.
Wow.
And so, everybody I spoke with, so, you know, it's like you just meet somebody, you're like, what do you have to say? The only thing you know about the person is that they at one time wanted to go to a Ryan Adams concert.
Right.
So I just said, oh, it's too bad you're not going to be going. And they, every one of them said, oh, my God, no, I'm going, just that my friend slash girlfriend, wife, whatever, can't make it. So everybody was real excited.
Yeah.
And it was good. It was very good.
Now, did you get the impression
he's got a great band.
Did you get the impression that if you were not in the gold circle and you're really far back, it'd be hard to sort of get into it?
Maybe. I don't think I would have minded that very much, to be honest. I mean, I spent time back there, like, using the bathrooms all the way in the back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the beer line, you know, the beer area was, like, outside in that open area.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're further away. You can't see as well. And it doesn't sound quite as loud, but I think I would have been okay with it. It didn't seem that bad. Maybe it's because it wasn't like real, real crowded. So you could get up somewhat close even with the cheap tickets. But one weird thing, before the show, somebody came out and was like, okay, next up, Ryan Adams. Everybody excited? Well, by the way, Ryan has this thing where green and red flashing lights, strobe effects, things like that, get him agitated, and he's got some sort of a condition. So, you know, if that's going on, he's going to have to stop the concert, and nobody wants that, right? We're like, okay, whatever. But about two-thirds of the way through, he's like, okay, I gotta single out this guy over here with the camera with the green light on it. He's like, If I see that one more time, he's like, I'm gonna have, I think he said it was an ocular seizure, and that he wouldn't be able to do, he wouldn't be able to go on anymore. And it's like, dude, what would happen if you turned around and saw the stage lighting? Like, would you die? Because I mean, it was as elaborate of stage lighting as you'll see anywhere outside of like a Pink Floyd show. And I was just, it was kind of weird. He was, you know, but it was kind of fun and interesting that he stopped the show just to say that. But, he built up a lot of momentum, and everybody's really excited, and that kind of took it down a little bit, and he had to crank it back up and get everybody back into it again after he kind of paused things. It was a little bit odd.
He got a reputation for that kind of thing? Because about 10 years ago, he was touring Australia. And so I guess it was when he was just starting to kind of get big and he was playing sort of bigger venues. And he was doing this concert in Melbourne, apparently. And someone sort of like, you know, towards the end of the show yelled out, "Summer of 69!
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Right.
As in a joke, you know, because it's a Bryan Adams song.
Yeah.
Right. And he and Ryan was like, oh, well, you know, I'm not going to keep playing until that guy gets kicked out.
Wow. He's had a change of heart about that. And he will actually play that now. He didn't when I saw him, but.
Oh, really?
I heard he had a pretty bad drinking problem at one time. And he's quit drinking.
Right, okay.
And he says that his attitude has changed a lot. And he actually met Ryan Adams one time, or Brian with a B. And he's like, the guy's just a nice guy. It's like, it is kind of funny that our names are so similar.
Yeah.
You can't deny that.
Such a funny scene.
Yeah.
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 So
Brian Adams is Canadian, right?
He is Canadian.
Yeah, he's probably a polite, nice guy, Canadian guy, right? That's a stereotype. Where's Ryan Adams from?
I think he's from South Carolina.
Seems like there would be a that kind of makes sense. I didn't know that though. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Okay, that's a legit live report. So at some point, maybe we should start talking about the bands from this week, right? We actually have music to talk about. Yeah. Now I'm waiting for one of you guys to say something funny, and you haven't done it yet, but I want you to do it so I can play this. Okay,
come.
But you haven't played.
Don't you worry.
Yeah, you haven't said anything.
Comedy gold's on its way.
You haven't.
I've been cracking jokes the whole time.
So yeah.
We both have.
Wait, maybe it's like this. Guy walks into a bar. There, how's that? All right. Okay. So let's see. Oh, let's talk about Lee Ranaldo. You know, he used to be in Sonic Youth, right?
Sonic Youth, yeah, it's true.
And now he plays music that doesn't sound like Sonic Youth.
Yeah, maybe more and more so. So he's got his new album out, which is called Electric Trim. Did you guys listen to it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I listened to it once.
Okay.
I listened to it a few times.
I must say, go on.
I listened to it a few times. And I we knew it was coming out, right? And then you mentioned that it was coming out, and then I thought, okay, I'm going to listen to it, decide whether it's podcast worthy. And I thought it was interesting and therefore podcast worthy because it had it had unexpected turns.
Yeah, there's a bit of a sort of a story behind the creation of it, and I guess I just wanted to remember to mention that, in fact, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for Lee Ranaldo.
Is that right?
Because, do you remember the story? Because this is how I actually discovered your podcast, I guess about whenever it was, 5 or 6 years ago. Because I guess I was, you know, kind of going through a Sonic Youth phase, really loving their kind of like later albums, and heard that Lee Ranaldo had put out sort of his first sort of proper solo album of songs, and I was desperate to hear any of it, and I didn't have a copy, and so I was just kind of basically searching the internet to see if I could find some tracks of this new album that was coming out. So this is 5 or 6 years ago, and that's when your podcast popped up, because you guys must have reviewed his album about 2 or 3 albums ago, called I can't remember what it was called. The one where he's walking on the front cover. Anyway, the time between the tides and the times. No, the one before that. I can't remember. Anyway, so that's how I discovered your podcast, just randomly, because I was just doing like a Google search on Lee Ranaldo and his album from a few albums ago. So I guess I owe Lee something.
Nice.
Yeah,
when you first said I wouldn't be here if it weren't for Lee Ranaldo, I'm like, what?
You'd be dead.
Wow. Like, he saved your life?
Like, yeah.
Pushed you out of the bus?
When I was a kid, I used to read these sort of like heavy metal magazines, and I always remember there was this letter that someone had written in saying, oh, you know, I was sitting down and I decided I was going to kill myself, but then I put on my headphones because I thought, oh, I might as well go out rocking. And then, you know, I started listening to the lyrics, and I don't know, he was listening to, it was like, you know, I don't even know what, I wish I knew what band it was, you know, like Motley Crue Dokken. There's probably something like Dokken. And then, you know, I started listening to the lyrics of Dokken, and then I thought, oh, no, you know, life's worth living. So, you know, you never know. You know, you might be right at the edge, and then you put on your headphones and there was something in the lyrics that turns you back. That's what made me think when you were talking about, you know, Lee Ranaldo saving your life.
Mm-hmm.
I've started rambling, guys, and we haven't even got into the review of the album.
Yeah. So what about the album?
Well, my opinion actually changed over the course of the last few weeks. I think I kind of liked it, but then I was almost about to sort of think, oh, maybe I don't like it that much, and then a little switch got flicked. And I reckon you've got to listen to it loud. I reckon that's my main takeaway message. Something about this album and the way that it's produced, I reckon if you listen to it loud, it's much better.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah. Well, let's play a track and then we'll go from there. So, Nicholas, take the first one.
Okay. This is a nice one with it's maybe a sort of a gentler one. Track 4, Last Looks. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a mellow one, but it's one of my favorites, too. And the listeners now are probably wondering who is the female vocalist. And very astutely, Nicholas did not mention it before we played it. So now everybody can guess, right?
There was a couple of things I didn't mention before that track, and do you want me to tell you who it was?
Yeah.
Sharon Von Etten.
She is like an indie rock... Not sensation, but like she's pretty prominent in the indie rock world, right?
I think,
in the U.S.
You know where she lives?
Darling.
She is. She lives in Brooklyn, and she's, you know, I wrote down like she's a solo artist, but she's also sang with Jay Maskus, The National, The Antlers, Beirut. She's on this album. She's all over this album, actually.
Oh, man.
So,
wow.
She obviously knows that she's got some cool friends.
Yeah. Wow. And Leonardo, he lives in Brooklyn now, too, right? But he didn't have to, or somewhere in New York City, right?
Yeah.
But he's a legit New York City. He didn't move there for indie rock stardom. Like, he already had indie rock stardom. So it's okay for him to be there, I think, right?
Yeah. Totally. He's earned it.
Do you want me to just start crapping on about the album?
Sure.
Well, I mean, the first... So he produced this in a different way to his last couple of albums, where his last couple of albums have been a bit more sort of, he's basically put together his own band and they've recorded as a band that sounded like a band, and I've really liked those albums. But this one was basically a collaboration between Lee and a producer, producer from Barcelona called Raúl Fernández, who's a famous Spanish record producer that Lee sort of met a few years ago when he was touring. And so basically the two of them collaborated on this album, and there are some of his bandmates as well as a whole lot of guests playing on the album. But basically they produced this over a year in New York and Barcelona. So it was mainly the two of them in the studio kind of building up this album. And so you can hear that song was probably a good example that he's kind of combined some of some electronic drums and electronic sampled sounds and stuff like that into the mix and into the way that they've made the song sound. So initially my feeling was, he's kind of done that thing where, you know, he's kind of decided to dabble in a bit of I've mixed in some electronica into my music, and I usually sort of think it never really works that well. And, you know, there was part of me that sort of felt maybe this album was a little overproduced or overworked, which is a terrible thing to say about an album, really. It's kind of like going to dinner, you know, at your friend's house and then sort of saying, yeah, I don't really like your wife. It's a bit hard to kind of come down from that kind of comment. But
yeah.
But actually, and that's why I think it's taken me a little bit of time to kind of like really warm into this album fully. And the more I listen to it, the more I like it. And I do kind of think it sounds different if you listen through a pair of speakers loud rather than, you know, not so loudly on a pair of headphones or something like that. I'm not really sure, but it's, you know, it's quite a lush, album, and lots sort of going on in the sounds. But I suppose ultimately they're great songs, and I do actually really love Lee Ranaldo's voice. He has a very sweet voice, and you know, I think it's a really strong collection of songs with just lots of beautiful moments, I suppose. You know, there's probably some like sections of songs that I think, you know, Did that really work? Did it not? But he's obviously decided to, you know, approach the way that he's produced this album quite differently than others. And he also collaborated with a writer, a novelist friend of his, who basically collaborated on some of the lyrics. So he sort of talked in a couple of the interviews that I heard just about, just wanted to sort of do things a bit differently than his previous albums. So I think it makes it kind of an interesting album, but in the end, these songs were all based on basically sort of acoustic songs that Lee Ranaldo wrote, and I think the strength of it is really in the songs themselves, and for me, his beautiful voice.
All right, let's play another one.
Wow,
I will make a pick.
Cool.
Let's go with track three called "Let's Start Again." That's Lee Ranaldo. The album is called Electric Trim.
Are there any bands that this album sort of reminds you of? Any sort of influence from other bands that when you heard it, you thought, there's a bit of a such and such influence, or anything jump out for you guys?
Nothing jumped out for me.
No.
Not a sort of a slightly like the Beach Boys or even the Beatles in terms of its the vibe of some of the songs or how he's written some of the songs, any of that sort of thing come out for you?
It kind of makes sense, but it didn't, like, Barrett's always the person who comes up with band comparisons.
I'd have to listen to it again and see if those jump out at me. I had a hard time with this because, aside from knowing that, you know, he's one of the founders of Sonic Youth and played guitar, I don't know anything about what he's done since, and it was kind of intimidating just to try to jump in and have something to say about his new album. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I wasn't sure how to approach it. So, I will listen to that and see if I hear that. That's interesting.
Have there been any bands that you've been into, and then the any of the members have gone on to have like their own solo career, and then you've followed that solo career? Like, if someone said to me, "Oh yeah, the guy from The National, he's put out his third solo album," a bit like you, Barrett, I'd be like, "Oh, I don't even know who you're talking about," and "Oh wow, he's up to his third album already." You know, right. So whenever I hear of like a famous band and the one of the members has done a number of solo albums, I usually have no interest in that at all, because it's just the actual original band that I'm interested in and how they sound as a band. But I suppose for me, Lee Ranaldo is an artist who I have actually sort of followed definitely in the last few years, his solo releases, and really kind of gotten into them and gotten into him as an artist in his own right.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah, and I think
sounds like something that if I went out and saw it live, that I would like it and then be able to go back and listen to the original albums and stuff and like it that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It just seemed like a difficult task to just form an opinion about this thing that I didn't really have much of a history with at all. So
Well, it depends too on how much you cared about the original band, right? Because here's an example: the guy from Vampire Weekend just put a solo album out, and I can't get motivated to listen to it because I just think that like if there were a new Vampire Weekend album, I would maybe just say, well, I'm going to listen to it once because it might be interesting enough. But, I'm not interested enough to go out and take the time to listen to it. Unless, of course, one of the Will's Band correspondents said it was good, then I probably would. But haven't heard anybody talking about it. So sorry, guy from Vampire Weekend.
I might actually seek that out and listen to that. I think I like Vampire Weekend more than you do.
I sort of have liked their albums, but for some reason, I'm also just not that motivated. It's one of those things. I don't know.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. Barrett, did anything make an impression to make a pick, or do you want to turn it back to Nicholas?
I'm going to turn it back to Nicholas, the resident expert on this album and others.
Let's do a song. So my son Fox, he liked this song because he talks about skeletons. So a song that has a lot of lyrics that talk about skeletons definitely jumped out of the speakers to my 4-year-old son Fox. So let's go with track 2, Uncle Skeleton.
Thank you.
Okay, we're going to need an analysis of the lyrical meaning.
Let's just say it's about death.
That's pretty good. I'll go with that.
Or maybe it's about life.
So that was an example of some lyrics that were sort of collaborated on with this novelist friend, this guy called Jonathan Lethem, who wrote. Did anyone know about the book Fortress of Solitude? You're right.
Nope.
No. I'm saying it like I know who he is. Oh, no idea. He writes sci-fi and detective novels, but he's a friend of Lee's, so you know he gave him some words and Lee put them into a song, and I think that was one of the songs. So yeah, you'd have to ask his mate. What's so like the song's about?
He's like the Bernie Taupin to the Elton John. Right?
Yeah. So there is a film of the making of this album. I'm laughing because it sounds like maybe I'd be the only one interested in going to see this film. So it's sort of doing the rounds of the film festivals at the moment. I think it was on at the New Jersey Film Festival. So for all of those in New Jersey, check your local newspapers. But there's a film called Hello, 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 which is a documentary about the making of this album. So I'd be kind of interested to see that. Hopefully it might come out on DVD or something like that later. But, yeah, so there seems to be a lot of, you know, the process of this album seemed to be an important aspect of it. I suppose the fact that Lee was sort of collaborating with this Spanish producer. He produced it over a long time, produced it in New York as well as Barcelona, had, you know, sometimes his bandmates playing on it. Sometimes it was just sort of, you know, layering it up with him and the producer. So it's, I guess that's, you know, that seems to be the main point that Lee's kind of making when he's talking about this album, that it was quite a different approach. So I guess, you know, we can let the listeners decide whether it worked or not. I'm never a huge fan of, you know, when a rock artist sort of decides to sort of introduce electronic elements that he normally wouldn't. It always kind of sounds slightly half-baked, I suppose. It always sounds like, oh, yeah, that's something that you're not that good at. And so it's never really the strongest part of the sound. Always sounds a little sort of like added in, I suppose. I don't know if you guys kind of got that from either of the clips that we listened to already.
I think it's okay, though, because I think it's colored in, but it doesn't change the character of the sound. Like, if you tried to make an album that was, you know, had a whole thing, the whole thing had, like, this electronic feel to it, then it would be different. Like, people talked about the National album, and Baird and I were talking about this, there's all these electronic components, and we both thought it just sounded, it didn't sound that different than what they've done before. So in a way it's like they didn't really try to change their sound. They just, they added little subtleties. That's kind of how I feel about this album. When I listen to it, it doesn't sound really, I mean, it's not raw like Sonic Youth, but it doesn't sound really electronic in nature to me.
No.
Right.
Yeah. All right.
That stuff just kind of adds a little texture, a little color to it.
Right.
Yeah.
Without really taking over.
Yeah. I mean, for me, I suppose there's something compelling about Lee Ranaldo, and, you know, as a person and his music. I don't really know what it is, but there's something that I find compelling that keeps drawing me back and drawing me in. I guess that's his thing that gets me. And so I do really like the album, and I guess I kind of I get excited that he's kind of making, that he's continuing to make new music. I mean, he's he doesn't look it, but he's 61 years old.
Yeah,
which sounds kind of old, but then I mean, as you get closer to 60, you know, you kind of realize, oh yeah, I suppose that's not that old. But am I going to be saying that about someone when I hear them like they've turned 70? Like if I hear, oh yeah, you know, Lee Ranaldo's turned 70. Am I going to think, oh, yeah, I guess that's not that old? I don't know. When am I going to start thinking that someone is actually old?
Well, thing is that we age along with them, so you know it's all relative. Yeah. No, I remember when
it's
I found out
what you are plus 20.
Yeah, that's what you are plus 20 is really old, right? So I remember it seemed like it was a decade ago that I was reading about how old Kim Gordon was, and she was like 57 or something. I'm like, "Oh my god, Kim Gordon is 57." So she's probably like 65 now. And it's like, but you think of her as like this, you know, this young punk rocker, right?
Yeah.
So it's pretty interesting. All right. That was good. That was good. We have another indie rock veteran group, right?
Yes.
We do.
The Clientele. Yeah, Barrett, you and I saw The Clientele, right? At the High Noon.
Yeah, it was a long time. It was probably 15 years ago.
Not 15 years ago. It wasn't that long ago. I didn't even know you 15 years ago. It was
what
like,
album was it during then?
It was probably like around like, you know, 2009 or 10. It was probably like 8 years ago. So that's what I'm going to say.
That's fine.
That's what I'm going to say. And you know what struck me about it? I remember this. He plays his guitar without a pick. He just like flicks his hand on the strings. Do you remember that?
Oh, I did not remember
that. I just remember thinking like you don't really see that very often with an electric guitar.
Right.
Maybe he doesn't do that in every song, but I remember seeing him like a lot doing that. So,
yeah.
So they hadn't had an album in what, several years at least, right?
I think it was seven or eight years. Yeah, and this is their I believe it's their seventh or eighth album too. So, I kind of just forgot about them. I guess if somebody had asked, yeah. I would have guessed that they probably broke up, but
right,
or just dormant.
Also, about a decade ago, roughly, I kind of liked. They had an album called Strange Geometry. I think that might have been my favorite one from like that's probably like 2005 or something, and. It was almost like a joke in the family because everybody else in my family hated The Clientele. And I would put it on, I'd play it, and I'd be like, oh, God, oh, take this off. Get rid of this. I couldn't sell that.
I don't understand.
I don't know. I couldn't sell anybody else in my family. Mm. But I always liked the that it's like a 60s vibe, right? And I think the new album sounds just kind of like a Clientele album, but it's pretty respectable for not having done anything for that many years, right?
Right. Yeah, and there are little things about it that are different. Talking about the Lee Ranaldo, Nicholas mentioned some of the little electronic flourishes he put in there and stuff. There's actually some of that in this Clientele album, which is really surprising to me.
Yeah, well, do you want to...
Very subtle, but...
Barrett, let's give you the first pick on this one.
Okay, I'm going to start with track number 5. Got the long title, Everything You See Tonight is Different from Itself. And two songs in the middle are 4 and 5 are both over 6 minutes long, and it just kind of adds some, I don't know what it is, maybe a, what does it do? It provides some gravity in the middle of the thing. And I think this is one of the more interesting and better songs. So Everything You See Tonight is Different from Itself.
Nothing is
clientele. The album is called Music for the Age of Miracles.
Mm-hmm. A couple of things about that that are different than any of the ones, the songs I've heard by them before. I have to admit, I didn't listen to, say, the last couple, maybe. There's kind of that fuzz guitar in there. That's very different.
Mm-hmm.
And usually their guitar would be kind of like a clean, clean sounding electric, but here they have a lot of nylon string acoustic guitars throughout the album, which is also kind of a different theme, but doesn't change the overall kind of feel of the thing, which is, I don't know how you describe it, just sounds so English to me, you know, and autumn-like and sleepy and dreamy.
Yeah. And it, to me, it sounds just totally, it's almost like I want to find some band from 1967 that it sounds just like, and I can't pinpoint anything. It's just a vibe that it has.
It's kind of like, it's a little bit like Nick Drake sometimes.
Yeah, that could be. Yep. Well, I'm gonna go with maybe a more like standard song, but I think like a really catchy, good song. So that's going to be, hey, it's track 7, Barrett. So you have to approve of that, right?
All right. Yeah.
It's called
Flip It Over. We got to play the first song inside too.
Right. It's called Everyone You Meet. Clientele. That was one of my favorites. That's why I played it, because it was one of my favorites.
That's pretty representative.
Yeah, you know how...
Like that, you'll like their catalog.
Right. You know how it has just... It's got a mood, right? It's like it puts you in this state of kind of... I don't know. It's an easygoing kind of mood thing, right? Have you ever had... If you've seen videos where they show... Like looking out of a train window and the landscape is going by, you know that thing, right?
Yeah.
So I was listening. Yeah. I was listening to this album in exactly that scenario. I was we were taking the train from downtown Denver to the airport, and I'm looking out the window, and the everything's going by, and this song is on, and I'm like, this is like a soundtrack to what I'm looking at. It was kind of cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's cool.
It was like I made my own little music video.
What did you think, Nicholas?
Well, I loved it, actually. I listened to this album a lot, and it's definitely... I hadn't even heard of this band before. So I've even started going back and listening to some of their older albums. So I loved it. I found it... I think track one was maybe not a great... is maybe not a great choice for track one, because there was something about it that kind of turned me off initially. But then, you know, whenever I went back to listen to the album, I would always start at track two, which is in fact a little instrumental piano piece. But I found the album just really lush. And I love the, you know, there seems to be this harp. There's a harp being played mm-hmm. throughout the yeah. album, the strings. I mean, it's a beautiful sounding album. It's in, yeah. And I found it interesting. Whenever I listened to it, there's lots of things I liked about it, I suppose. You know, as well as the instrumentation, so the harp and some great bass playing as well, really melodic bass playing. I don't know if you were tuned into that, Will, being a bass player, but I, you yes. know, lots of times I was thinking, wow, that bass is cool.
Yeah, definitely.
But I found it whenever, so I'd listen to it a lot, but then every time I listen to it, I would never be singing along. I could never remember any of the lyrics. It was almost like every time I listened to it, it was kind of like I was listening to it for the first time again. I don't know how to, what that even means, but it's not like it's kind of unmemorable it's not kind of catchy with kind of hooks or choruses that you sort of like
right.
remember. But for some reason I found that really satisfying, that every time I listened to it, I wasn't even sure which track I was listening to. It just kind of like washes over you like a beautiful kind of like warm wave of water or something like that. So
there's like an elusive quality about it.
Yeah, something like that. But a very yeah. sort of consistent album. You know, it's definitely, you know, it's not like I felt like, oh, there's good tracks and there's bad tracks. I really like the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you for turning me on to the band. Terrible band name, though, I have to say. Don't you think? The Clientele, it's a terrible band name.
Huh. It never bothered me. It's like, yeah, just come up with something simple, you know? I'm not.
It's got a softness to it that fits the sound, right? You know, it's not called like a bad. What about Cherokee Drive? Would that be a good name for these guys?
Slightly better. No. I don't know. It's like calling your band Price Tag or something like that. it's really kind of unemotive or something.
Well, yeah. You like the band Shopping, right? That's kind of like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Hospitality.
Yeah, Hospitality is a band. So, Nicholas, what's your pick going to be?
Oh, let's go with kind of the title track, so The Age of Miracles. I thought it reminded me a little bit of The Church, who you guys know I love. Certainly had a vibe that reminded me of The Church. Definitely some nice bass playing in this, and even the vocals sounded a little bit like Marty Wilson Piper, who's no longer in the Church, but he was the sort of lead guitar player and sometimes sang some of their songs. So have a think about this while you listen to track 12, The Age of Miracles.
Turning corners into light, turning
There you go.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Yeah, it's very nice.
Do you think, I know I seem to be focusing on like what things sound like, but do you think when he's singing kind of low, does he remind you of Leonard Cohen's voice a little bit?
A little bit. It's got that breathy low thing. Yeah.
And then when he sings up high, he sounds a little bit like John Lennon.
Yeah, I can see that. Like he's got, most of it is kind of breathy and high and thin and like, you know, like a head voice.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like it's just sort of originating in the upper part of his body. But there were times, I did notice on some of the songs he sang a little lower than usual. And, you know, a lot of times when somebody sings low like that, and I think Leonard Cohen does this, it goes out of tune a little bit in a way that's acceptable and kind of even, I like it a lot.
Mm-hmm.
This guy managed, I think his name is Alistair McLean, managed to stay in tune at the low end of his register, which is pretty cool.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. So I think it's a pretty worthy album for as long of a hiatus as they had. I think it's pretty solid.
Mm-hmm. I read some interviews and stuff and learned that they're not really that big in the UK, although they're from London. So, you know, they've been a Merge Records band since, you know, their first album. So 17, 18 years on Merge Records out of North Carolina. So I think it's just kind of a American indie rock, you know, thing that I'd be curious to see if, you know, what Craig thinks if he's, you know, do they tour over there or are they, you know, is it like, I don't know. There must be an American that's big in the UK that, or even in Australia that never really made it here.
Yeah.
Those things happen once in a while.
Right. Yep.
Well, they're touring in America in early November. So where are they going to be near you? Chicago? Is that near you? No, Boston.
We're near Chicago. You guys.
Yeah.
We're near Chicago.
Go and see them in Chicago in about a month.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So maybe they're too English for the English. Maybe they sound too English, so English people don't want to hear that something that sounds less English. Who knows? Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm looking at their tour dates now. They're playing at Moe's Barbecue in Inglewood, Colorado. That's interesting. Yeah, in Chicago, they're playing at the Subterranean. That's a pretty small venue. That would be good, though. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I could be talked into that.
I wouldn't be if it's in the middle of a week. Yeah, it's on a Tuesday. That's not good. Yeah.
That's tough. Yeah.
It's unfortunate. Okay. Well, we have rambled on, but I think basically every word and every second of this recording has been worthwhile and far, just way above $0. I think this could be like 20 cents. What do you think?
I'm going to have to listen to it and see. I'm not sure.
Evaluate later.
I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In the heat of the performance and the pressure to sound as good as we do, we can lose sight of, you know, how good is the actual performance, right? It's only later upon reflection that we can evaluate it. It's like when a band has to, like, sometimes later decide, you know, was this our greatest album or not, right?
Right.
Yeah,
the thing I find for me kind of curious about, I guess, you know, being a guest on your podcast, you know, I've really got no idea at all how the audience reacts to any of these episodes. I guess the episodes that I've been a guest on, you know, I guess you guys might be in a position where you get people send comments, I don't know, but it's very much, you know, the audience is completely silent, you know, invisible, you know, I've got no idea if there are people who are like, are that Australian guys on this episode, skip, and they go straight to, you know, listen to this week's episode of, you know, This American Life or whatever it is.
Right.
I've got no idea, or if it's like, oh, yeah, this guy's funny, I've really got no idea. So it's, you know, I just kind of have to do this and just kind of like, I basically do it. It feels like I'm basically socializing with you guys.
Yeah.
I get to hang out with you guys and sort of talk crap for an hour or two, have a laugh, and that's kind of it. But I've really got no idea because, you know, there's people who presumably listen to this, but I've got no idea what people what people think of it, if they think it's a good episode or a bad episode, if they just listen to the first 5 minutes and push stop. It's really, it's kind of a weird thing.
It is weird.
No comments that I've ever read had any distinction about an individual person at all. It's all
right
that, oh, I've been listening for so long, and I listen to it while I'm doing this or that, and from all different parts of the world. And I think most people listen and just sort of, don't participate, which is totally fine. But once in a while, they'll send a note, and it's like, wow, I don't know.
Yeah, like
I try to keep those people in mind when I do this.
You know? Sometimes they say you've got to get that Nicholas guy off the podcast. So. No, actually, I have never gotten a comment, you know, either positive or negative about, like Barrett says, about any individual. So nobody has ever said, this guy is the greatest or this guy's terrible. So, so we're just going to just keep doing what we feel like.
A bit like our feeling for Tom Petty, you know. There's nothing wrong with it. Right. We're agnostic.
Right. We don't really know for sure whether the podcast exists or not. We take no position. Yeah.
Right.
All right. Well, I think we should sign off before the listeners sign off for us. We don't want too many people turning it off before it's over, right? Right now they're dropping off. Like they're dropping off. They're like, obviously there's nothing good for the rest of this thing. So all right.
Except of course my diehard fans, they just listen to every last word and syllable.
Right.
They're just hanging on.
Everybody
I think though that if anybody is listening and has an opinion about any of it, maybe especially including Nicholas's participation. Yeah. If you wanna drop us a note, I think Nicholas would appreciate that.
That's true. I'd appreciate negative feedback. Even negative is better than no feedback.
Yeah. If it's negative, he'll take it as constructive criticism. He'll work on it, study up his technique before the next time he's on.
Right.
Yeah. All right, let's sign off. We'll talk to you again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
All right, good night.
Good night.
You can subscribe to the Will's Band of the Week podcast using iTunes or any other podcast app. All of our podcasts are also available directly on our webpage, willsband.net. You can contact us directly by email to willsband@yahoo.com, on our Facebook page, or on Twitter @willsband. The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you every week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.